and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Saturday, January 30th. I'm your reader, Mary Neff. Let's start with a look at the weather today. Today and tomorrow going to be wintry mix, likely with wind. Tomorrow there's going to be a good chance of snow. High in around 32 today, tomorrow around 30. For those who are weather geeks, the record high was 56 in 2012, and the record low in 2019 was minus 26 on this day. The Gazette's front page has a number of local stories, and so we will start with this one titled In-Person School Options Starts by February 15th, written by Aaron Murphy. Dateline Des Moines. The ink was not yet dry Friday on Governor Kim Reynolds' first K-12 education law when she began lobbying for her next school proposal, one that may be short on support. Reynolds signed into law a requirement that K-12 schools offer to all students, beginning in February, the option of 100% in-person learning, even if districts are not operating completely in-person during the COVID-19 pandemic. During a ceremony at the Iowa Capitol for signing Senate File 160 into law, Reynolds spoke about that bill, but also pivoted to making a push for her other major K-12 education priority this year, a sweeping proposal that creates taxpayer-funded private tuition assistance for students in struggling schools, expands the state's public charter school program, and eliminates diversity programs that do not allow students to open enroll out of the district to another public school. A Republican state lawmaker said Friday the governor's school choice proposal does not, in its current form, have sufficient support to pass the GOP-led Iowa House. Representative Brent Segrist, Republican of Council Bluffs, who's an assistant majority leader and former House Speaker, said there are not the votes in the House to pass the bill. There are not the votes in the House Republican caucus, at least now, not even close. He said this during the Council Bluffs Area Chamber of Commerce's legislative Zoom event. Continuing, there is a lot of opposition to that language because of what it would mean long-term for a system of vouchers in the state of Iowa, end quote. At the signing ceremony, Reynolds highlighted various K-12 education programs that have been created and investments that have been made during her tenure before making the direct pitch for Senate File 159, the proposal she calls her, quote, Students First Act. Reynolds said while signing the in-person law, which goes into effect February 15th, this is just the beginning. The pandemic has put a spotlight on K-12 education across the nation. And while I believe with all my heart that Iowa has the best education system in the country, we're not perfect. We can do better, and we should, end quote. Reynolds and supporters, chiefly fellow Republicans, say the, quote, school choice legislation would provide more educational options for Iowa students and families, particularly in schools that are underperforming, according to metrics in a federal education program. Critics of the proposal, chiefly Democrats and many public education advocates, have expressed concern it would weaken the state's public school system by creating more competition for limited state funding. Reynolds said Friday, "I have no desire to defund our schools or prevent their progress, but I will not turn a blind eye to opportunities for improvement where it's necessary. A strong public school system is imperative, and my education reform bill has the potential to raise the quality of all schools. Every child deserves a quality education, regardless of income and no matter their zip code. And when a school is failing a child, parents should have the ability to change the course of their child's education for the better. We will always look to create opportunities for every single Iowan, including our youngest," end quote. The Republican-controlled Iowa Senate passed Reynolds' proposal this week. Three Senate Republicans voted against it, and a fourth voted against it in committee, but in favor of its final passage there. In the GOP-controlled House, Speaker Pat Grassley, Republican of New Hartford, said the bill will be given consideration, but not immediately. Senate Bill 159 likely will need the support of at least 51 of the 59 House Republicans, since it seems unlikely any Democrats will support the measure. All Senate Democrats voted against it. Iowa Democratic Party Chairman Ross Wilburn said in a statement, "During a pandemic, when our schools and teachers have been forced to do even more with less, we should be investing more resources in our public schools than ever before. From ever-increasing class sizes to rural consolidation, it's clear that we need to invest in the kids in our public schools, not take money away for vouchers. Every child in Iowa should have the opportunity to go to a top-notch public school with all the tools they need to be successful. And he continued, Iowa Democrats will continue to fight for world-class public schools for every child, no matter their zip code. Next on the Gazette's front page is this article written by Aaron Jordan and Rod Beauchart of the Gazette. It's titled, Smoking Could Be Allowed at Vet's Home. The Iowa Veterans Home in Marshalltown would be required to allow all its residents to smoke, despite risking federal funding, according to a state Senate study bill passed this week by a legislative subcommittee. The Veterans Home, Iowa's only care facility specifically for veterans and their spouses, prohibited smoking in 2019, following an inspection by Veterans Affairs and the implementation of a nationwide no-smoking policy in VA facilities, the Marshalltown Times-Republican reported. The Veterans Home, also known as IVH, is one of the largest such facilities in the country, providing care and housing for up to 550 veterans. There are 412 residents there now. Home administrators allowed 41 residents who started living there before the ban to continue to smoke in a designated area with supervision. The problem is, newer residents don't think it's fair they can't smoke too, despite having signed a pledge to adhere to the no-smoking policy. Senator Jim Carlin, Republican of Sioux City, said the residents of the home are war veterans. They deserve the dignity and freedom of choice if they've been smoking that long. We want to allow our veterans at IVH to smoke and make accommodations for that, end quote. Veterans Home Administration said this week they were not consulted about the bill. The facility said in an email, all applicants are made aware that IVH is transitioning to a smoke-free environment to ensure a future emphasis on health and safety for our staff and residents. Smoking is no longer permitted for new admissions. We are all aware that smoking is a hazard to personal health and to those who are impacted by secondhand smoke, end quote. The Veterans Home has had incidents in past years in which smoking caused injury or property damage, in one case resulting in death, the home reported. The Veterans Affairs Subcommittee voted 2-1 this week to pass SSB 1080, but not before some lively debate. Senator Mark Edler, a Republican of State Center, said he has a petition with signatures of 100 Veterans Home residents who think smoking should be allowed to continue. Edler said, I sat and listened to my residents, and I heard both sides, and I had non-smokers tell me that they think that others should be able to smoke. I've had non-smokers say they shouldn't be smoking, but at the end of the day, this is about rights and rights of your home. Senator Liz Mathis, Democrat of Hiawatha, said she'd rather help veterans quit smoking to improve their health and reduce secondhand smoke for staff, saying, you're making it sound like smoking is all they have to live for. Carlin replied, you've probably never smoked yourself. You've probably never hung out at a bar, had a beer, smoked cigarettes with your buddies. I used to be a bouncer in a bar and a bartender, and I would be serving people drinks, you know. That becomes almost like church to these people, and that's how they socialize. That's how they hang out, end quote. Mathis said skirting the Department of Veterans Affairs' nationwide no-smoking policy might put at risk the $20 million a year the federal government provides to the Veterans Home. This federal support is nearly 23% of the home's $87.2 million budget, as compared with the $7.1 million, or 8%, from Iowa's general fund. Mathis said they would lose federal funding, and that would be disastrous. More from the Gazette's front page, this one under the title, UI Dental Students Rally Despite Blowback, written by Vanessa Miller, Dateline, Iowa City. Back in May, University of Iowa third-year College of Dentistry student Chichi Adeleke said in a promotional video for the institution, the reason I chose Iowa is simple. I was beyond impressed. Whether it's within classes, between faculty and students, or students and staff, everyone here is more than willing to help each other succeed, Adeleke said in a video to the question of why she chose the UI college. And she continued, and I knew that was the environment that was right for me, end quote. But on Friday, speaking to dozens of her peers in frigid temperatures outside the college she had promoted just months ago, Adeleke said she regretted it. Quote, externally, they look like they're okay, but internally, things are broken, end quote. Adeleke said she has been part of the dental college's efforts to appear successful, appointing students of diverse backgrounds to panels, giving them leadership positions, and tapping them to recruit other minorities. But she said this is something that many students in this college, myself included, no longer feel comfortable doing. The protest and the issues swirling around it are the focus of a legislative oversight hearing that began this week and continues next on a recurring topic in the Iowa legislature, free speech on campus. GOP lawmakers say they are worried that conservative voices at the public universities are being squelched, sometimes in the name of diversity initiatives, and with the support of campus administrators. Adeleke is among a group of UI dental students who formed the Action UIowa Task Force to demand change in the dental college, which is under fire from both sides of the political spectrum for, among other things, its handling of a White House executive order last fall from the Trump administration barring certain types of diversity training. In a mass email, college leaders condemned that order, which prohibited federal fund recipients like the UI from promoting race and sex, quote, stereotyping and scapegoating in diversity trainings. Replying to everyone on that email thread, a conservative student questioned the university's objection, sparking a lengthy back and forth that left some students saying they felt targeted. The conservative student, Michael Braze, was called in for a disciplinary hearing, but Republican lawmakers became involved and the UI canceled the hearing. Braze earlier this week told his story to an Iowa House Oversight Committee, demanding the UI be held accountable. During the hearing Wednesday that included talk of the impending protest, Representative Bobby Kaufman, Republican of Wilton, told Braze that, quote, anybody that supports using their First Amendment rights to trample on yours is a raging hypocrite, end quote. Braze said he and fellow conservative students have been called white supremacists and racists, leaving them fearful to speak freely. Friday's protesters, however, said they're the ones who feel unwelcome and unsafe. Task Force members and supporters read comments and stories from anonymous students, including one from a minority student who reported being asked often if peers could touch her hair. Another minority student said one faculty member confuses her with another student of the same race because they, quote, look the same. One student reported being asked whether his or her home country has prescription medication or whether people just sell drugs on the street. Those students have a long list of demands, including more diversity resources and training, stricter professionalism guidelines, social media student conduct guidelines, and revised admissions processes. Johnson County Supervisor Roysanne Porter, who spoke at Friday's rally, said the students are going to get what they're demanding. Porter said, they're going to get the help that they need. I've already put it in place. They're going to sit down with the right people. They're going to have a seat at the table. They're going to say what they need. They're going to get what they want. This is just the beginning. And the article concludes, UI administrators are expected to testify next week before the House Oversight Committee about their handling of the White House order and the email fallout. As I said when we started, the Gazette has a lot of information on the front page. We have one more story. Fatal Hiawatha shootout declared self-defense, written by Kat Russell. A shootout last year at the Sunset Village Mobile Home Park in Hiawatha that left 3 men injured and a 4th man dead will not lead to major criminal charges. After authorities investigated the chaotic events around the May 30, 2020 gunfight, Linn County Attorney Jerry Vandersanden announced Friday the killing of Joshua Lathrop, age 31, was justified under Iowa's Stand Your Ground self-defense law. Only one charge of illegally carrying a gun will be filed against one of the combatants. According to the investigation findings, officers were dispatched at 11:40 p.m. that day to the mobile home park in response to more than 20 emergency calls. The altercation may have stemmed from Tyler and Tyrone Bell, who are twins, searching the mobile home park for two unknown men who allegedly attacked Tyler Bell's girlfriend, the findings indicated. Witnesses said the brothers were searching the park, yelling they were gonna get somebody, and Tyrone Bell was visibly armed. Another witness reported that Lathrop, described as highly intoxicated and in the mood for a fight, confronted Tyrone Bell, demanding to know what he was doing and why he was armed. Witnesses said Lathrop ordered Bell to leave the park, but also prevented Bell from making it back to his car. Several people, including Chad Harris and Truman Harris, who are not related, who both lived in the park, came to Lathrop's aid, according to the investigation. Both the Harrises were armed. Hearing the commotion, Tyler Bell came to his brother's aid. Witnesses told the police the argument continued to escalate, and that's when Lathrop punched Tyrone Bell in the face, nearly knocking Bell backward onto a vehicle. It was then that the shooting started. According to the investigation findings, witness accounts became confusing at this point. Tyrone Bell said he saw Truman Harris running toward him and believed Harris was going to shoot him. Truman Harris said he saw Tyrone Bell shoot Lathrop, and then Bell began to shoot at him. Chad Harris said he was approaching Tyrone Bell from behind when he was shot, possibly by Truman Harris. And Tyler Bell said he was approaching the scene when Lathrop punched his brother and gunfire just erupted, hitting him immediately. Investigators said a total of 25 shots were fired. All three handguns were recovered from the scene, investigators said. When Hiawatha police officer Chad Breidinger responded that night to the mobile home park, he found four people with gunshot wounds. Lathrop was dead on arrival, the findings show. An autopsy later showed he was shot twice. The fatal bullet entered his chest, perforating his heart and lungs, while a second bullet struck his left hand and became lodged in his right forearm. Toxicology testing showed Lathrop had a blood alcohol level of 0.21, more than 2.5 times the legal limit to drive. Also found injured were Tyrone Bell, Tyler Bell, and Chad Harris. Tyrone Bell was shot several times in the chest, abdomen, arms, and legs, investigators said. He was rushed to University of Iowa hospitals and clinics, where he spent 3 weeks recovering. Medical records indicate there was no evidence of alcohol or drugs in his system at the time of the shooting, investigators said. Tyler Bell was shot 4 times, once in the right shoulder, once in the right hip, once in the right elbow, and once in the left hand. He also was found to be clear of alcohol or drugs at the time. Chad Harris was shot 3 times, the right shoulder, right side of his buttocks, and left thigh. He had a blood alcohol level of 0.162, roughly twice the legal limit to drive. Van der Sanden said in his findings, all four principal participants in the altercation freely and voluntarily spoke to investigators about their role in the shooting incident. None of them requested the assistance of an attorney. The three who fired weapons, Tyrone Bell and Truman and Chad Harris, adamantly claimed they did so to defend themselves or to defend another person. Claims, Van der Sanden said, authorities were unable to disprove. Van der Sanden said he concluded that Lathrop was the initial aggressor in the fight, and, though the others may not have exercised good judgment either, he said, Lathrop's actions ignited a larger conflict. He deliberately confronted a person he knew to be armed, prevented that person from peacefully leaving the scene of the conflict, and assaulted him by striking him in the face, the county attorney said, and continued, the fact Lathrop was heavily intoxicated at the time may have played a factor in the course of conduct, end quote. According to the findings, the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation determined the bullet entering Lathrop's chest was fired from Tyrone Bell's gun. The bullet in Lathrop's arm was fired from the gun used by Truman Harris, who had fired 14 times, the findings reported. Van der Sanden wrote that Iowa law on self-defense does not require a person act with perfect judgment. A person acting in self-defense may be wrong in their estimation of danger or the force necessary to repel the danger, as long as there is a reasonable basis for the belief, and the person acts reasonably in response to that belief. A person acting in self-defense has no duty to retreat or seek an alternate course of action as long as they are not engaged in illegal activity. And the article concludes, the only person who will be charged in connection with the incident is Tyler Bell, accused of carrying a firearm in a public place without a legal permit. Moving on to COVID information, here's an article by Michaela Ram titled Johnson Begins Next Phase of Vaccines Monday. Subtitled, Those 65 and Older Will Be Contacted by Healthcare Providers. On Monday, this Monday, Johnson County will begin distributing COVID-19 vaccines to people who qualify under the state's vaccine distribution plan, including residents 65 and older and certain essential workers. The state announced earlier this month that it would begin administering shots to populations that fall under Phase 1B by February 1st, but warned the current stream of vaccines arriving in the state will likely create a slow rollout. Johnson County Public Health announced this week that county residents 65 and older who receive their vaccine from the University of Iowa Healthcare will receive their vaccine from the University of Iowa Healthcare or Mercy Iowa City provider. Those providers will call or email qualified patients to schedule the vaccine appointment, and residents are asked not to contact their provider at this time. UIHC officials said earlier this week its providers would identify those who want to be vaccinated using an online scheduling system. Existing UIHC patients can express interest using MyChart, and those not already in the system can register using a web portal. The list will be prioritized using Iowa Department of Public Health guidelines, and it will be used for scheduling, quote, as vaccine becomes available over the next several weeks and months. The supply of vaccines is limited, public health officials warned, so only a limited number of eligible patients will be contacted. UIHC has not said how many doses it will receive, but officials expect it will be, quote, in the several hundreds up to 1,000, said UIHC's CEO in a news conference on Tuesday. As the vaccine becomes more available, additional providers will schedule more appointments, public health officials say. UI CEO noted that the vaccine rollout is expected to increase in the coming months, saying, there will be enough vaccine and we will take care of you over the next several weeks and months. We wanted to be sure to reassure all eligible patients across the corridor that we are confident that the supply of vaccine will increase in February, March, and April. Iowa's Phase 1B distribution plan also includes other at-risk populations, such as people with disabilities living at home, as well as essential workers most at risk for exposure to the virus, such as those in food, manufacturing, and distribution who work and live in congregate settings. Priority for these populations is broken into five tiers, starting with first responders, pre-K through 12 school, early education, and child care workers. Iowa 65 and older can get a vaccine at any point during the Phase 1B rollout. Johnson County Public Health plans to work directly with these organizations on vaccine delivery and will instruct them which pharmacies are scheduling appointments for staff, officials announced. Public health officials said as the vaccine supply increases, additional providers and more appointments will be available. And we'll take a moment to review some of the statistics for COVID that were published by the Gazette from Friday's report. Kat Russell reports, on Friday, Iowa reported 950 new COVID-19 cases and 45 new confirmed deaths. The seven-day average of new cases was 967, marking the first time that average has dropped below 1,000 since October 10th. The new cases were found in 3,781 tests that were conducted during the 24-hour period that ended at 11 a.m. Friday, for a one-day positivity rate of 25.1%. Eight of Iowa's 99 counties had 14-day positivity rates above 15%. Linn County reported 72 new cases Friday, seven-day average of 59, and to date, 18,333 cases have been reported in Linn County. Johnson County had 15 new ones with the seven-day average of 29, and since March, their total is now 12,413 cases. Iowa total has had 317,387 COVID-19 cases and 4,577 virus-related deaths since March. Regarding hospitalizations, the number of people hospitalized during the last 24-hour period from 391 on Thursday, it dropped to 383 on Friday. As for vaccines, as of 6 a.m. Thursday, a little over 48 million COVID-19 vaccine doses have been distributed in the U.S., according to the CDC. More than half of them have been administered. In Iowa, around 391,000 doses of the vaccine have been distributed, and of that, about 235,000 had been administered as of Thursday, with 223 roughly going to Iowa residents. Some 52,000 Iowans have completed their two-dose regimen. In Linn County, about 18,000 doses have been administered, with 17,000 county residents vaccinated and 3,700 completing the two-dose series. And in Johnson County, there have been roughly 28,000 vaccine doses administered. That includes around 20,000 county residents, 6,000 of whom have completed the two-dose series. And finally, of the 45 deaths reported Friday, 30 were among people over the age of 80, 13 of those between 61 and 80. Counties reporting one death each were Adair, Cherokee, Fayette, Franklin, Guthrie, Hardin, Harrison, Johnson, Jones, Kossuth, Lee, Lynn, Lyon, Marion, O'Brien, Story, and Woodbury. To date, Linn County has reported 282 deaths since March. Johnson has reported 56. Jones County has had 51. And as of 11 a.m. Friday, 58 long-term care facilities in Iowa were reporting COVID-19 outbreaks, which is two down from that previous 24-hour period. In lieu of a Gazette editorial, they have included on their Insight page a guest column by LaSheila Yates. Ms. Yates is a moderator and producer of KCRG-TV9's Ethical Perspectives on the News. She worked over a decade in local government, received her certified public manager dedication from Drake University, and also has a certified professional designation from the Society of Human Resource Management. Ms. Yates writes this column titled, "Will We Sustain Our Support for Black-Owned Businesses?" As a local Black business owner, one question I've pondered over the past several months is whether or not our community will sustain our support of local Black businesses when hashtag support Black businesses is no longer trendy. In our current climate of contemporary pro-Black activism and Black solidarity, we've seen individuals in our community from diverse backgrounds make unified efforts to dismantle institutional injustices, specifically with regard to African Americans. We've also seen a surge of Twitter hashtags that include Buy Black, Support Black Owned, and Support Black Businesses when consumers support Black businesses. While these efforts are much needed, I continue to wonder whether or not we maintain our support of local Black businesses when pro-Blackness is no longer the issue of the day or popular opinion. By we, I mean us as individuals, a collective, a community, entities, and institutions. When considering this social context, my concern is that when the perceived relevance of contemporary pro-Blackness fades, so goes our support of Black businesses. If this is the case, we must acknowledge that abandoning such support disrupts the strides that Black entrepreneurs have made toward establishing, growing, and expanding their business during an era when business ownership seems possible and feasible. Such abandonment can also dampen budding business concepts that need the right soil, potting, and nourishment for Black entrepreneurs to flourish in our community. Although there's never a one-size-fits-all model for any socioeconomic condition, I believe there are approaches we can take to critically examine this matter. We can start by examining economic development efforts that have taken place in our community that have focused specifically on Black entrepreneurship and explore whether or not they've been sustainable. We can also examine sustainability models of comparable communities, determining whether the pedagogy of traditional or accelerated small business startup programs are a good fit for Black businesses. We can also learn from local established businesses such as Unique Beauty Supply, Sugar Peach, Willie Caldwell State Farm Agent, and the Crab Attack Cajun Seafood Shack, and learn about sustainable business practices they've exercised in our local market. It's important to realize that there are real people and families behind the source of socioeconomic fades. As a community and individuals, it's important to consider the human element when continuing to support the growth and development of Black entrepreneurs when the hashtags disappear. Before we move to the obituaries, we'd like to remind you that you are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Saturday, January 30th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now we will turn to the obituaries. Starting with the short notices, Barbara Hladek, Hladek, age 82, died yesterday. Her services are being handled through Iowa cremation, and she was from Cedar Rapids. From Biola, Edwin Hart, age 79, died last Thursday. Arrangements being held through Getch Funeral Home in Anamosa. From Waukon, Lois M. Benecke, age 70, died Wednesday, January 27th. The family's being assisted by Martin Grau Funeral Home in Waukon. And also from Waukon, Larry Daniel White, age 71, died Tuesday, January 26th. Arrangements being made through Iowa cremation. And then Marilyn J. Cooney Reese, R-E-E-S-E, age 83, of Muscatine, died on Thursday, January 28th. Her arrangements are being handled through Lensing Funeral and Cremation Service. Moving to the longer notices, from Cedar Rapids, Norbert M. Banowetz, age 89, of Cedar Rapids, died Wednesday, January 27th. A private service will be held. Burial will be at 1 p.m. Monday in the Sacred Heart Catholic Cemetery in Maquoketa. There will be a visitation on Sunday from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home. As mandated by proclamation, social distancing must be practiced, which requires a limited number of people allowed into the visitation at one time, and the use of face masks or shields is required. The family asks that in lieu of flowers, you consider a memorial donation directed in Norbert's memory to Keystone Place at 6126 Rockwell Drive Northeast in Cedar Rapids, 52402. Next, Christy M. Henderson, age 43, of Cedar Rapids and formerly of Central City, passed away in her home on January 18th. A celebration of her life will be held from 4 to 8 p.m. Friday, February 26th, at the Central City American Legion, and masks will be required. Again, that's Friday, February 26th. Next, Donald Fish, also known as Duck, age 57, of Cedar Rapids, died last Thursday. Visitation will be 5 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday, February 2nd, at Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids, with a memorial service at 10:30 a.m. on Wednesday, February 3rd, at the funeral home. Burial will follow at Shiloh Cemetery in Hiawatha. Guests are respectfully requested to wear a mask and practice social distancing. A live stream of the funeral may be accessed on the funeral home website tribute page for Duck under Photos and Videos or Media, and that will start at 10:30 a.m. this coming Wednesday. Diane K. Smith, age 84, of Cedar Rapids, died Wednesday, January 27th, at her home. Her service will be held at 11 a.m. this Thursday at Hillside Wesleyan Church. A private family burial will be held at Cedar Memorial Cemetery, but friends may visit with the family on Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m. at Tien Funeral Home. Per COVID guidelines, attendees are asked to wear masks and practice social distancing. And they also, the family asks that memorials be directed to the Hall Perrine Cancer Center in Diane's name. There's a very brief notice related to the service that had been scheduled for John, J-O-N, Weaver. It says, due to the forecasted winter storm today, the visitation for John Weaver has been rescheduled to Sunday, February 7th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Tien Funeral Home, and a celebration of life will be held at a later date. John Lewis Talley, age 76, of Marion, passed away on Monday, January 25th. In agreement with his wishes, he was cremated, but a celebration of life will be held at a later date. Inurnment will take place at Memory Garden Cemetery in Iowa City. Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Marion is assisting the family. And the family asks that memorials in John's memory be directed to the Marion Christian Church at 1050 McGowan Boulevard in Marion. Continuing, Deborah D., age 67, of Bertram, passed away Thursday, January 28th. A graveside service was held today at 10:30 in the Campbell Cemetery, and the family has asked that a memorial fund has been established. You could contact the funeral home for more information. Their arrangements were held through Popich Kuba Funeral Service in Cedar Rapids. Kevin Townsend Dalmut, age 39, passed away Tuesday, January 19th in Iowa City. His celebration of life will be held on March 6, 2021 in Springfield, Virginia, and will offer virtual and in-person opportunities to come together. They also ask if you would like to donate in his memory, consider donating to the Movember Foundation. That's M as in Mary, O-V-E-M-B-E-R Foundation, which you can find more information at Movember.com. We do have several more obituaries, one for Marjorie E. Shaw, age 69, of Manchester, who passed away at the Good Neighbor Home in Manchester on Thursday, January 28th. A memorial service will be announced and held at a later date. Arrangements are being made through Bonnenkamp Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Manchester. The family asks to thank the staff of the Good Neighbor Home and St. Croix Hospice for the compassionate care she received, also acknowledging Marjorie's family of loving caregivers. They ask that memorials be directed to Camp Courageous of Iowa in Margie's memory. Keith R. Long, age 98, of Lone Tree and formerly of Iowa City, died at Mercy Hospital in Iowa on January 27th. Per his wishes, he was cremated, and private family services will be held at a later time in Colorado. Lensing Funeral and Cremation Service in Iowa City is handling the arrangements. Next, Neoma Marie Babe Gunther, age 96, of Dundee, passed away last Wednesday at her residence. Visitation will be held from 2 to 5 p.m. tomorrow at Leonard Muller Funeral Home in Manchester. Because of COVID-19 concerns, masks are required at the funeral home. Interment will be at Floral Hills Memorial Gardens in Olwine. Esaias T. Grimes, age 12, son of Shadley and Daniel Grimes of North Liberty, died at his home on Tuesday, January 26, from conditions related to epilepsy. Private family services will be held at 2 p.m. tomorrow at Gay and Chena Funeral and Cremation Service in Iowa City. Services will be live-streamed for friends and extended family, and for a complete obituary or to share your support and memories with Isaiah's family, or find a link to the live-stream details, you can go to the GayandChia.com website under obituaries. Sandra Marie Schulte, age 76, of Norway, passed away Thursday, January 28th at St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids. A private family service will take place at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Cedar Rapids with burial at St. Michael's Cemetery in Norway at a later date. Brosh Funeral Service is handling these arrangements. Our final obituary today is for Bernice Nickel Comer, C-O-M-M-E-R-S, of Wellman, who passed away at the age of 106 last Wednesday at Parkview Manor in Wellman. A celebration of her life will be at 10:30 a.m. this Wednesday, February 3rd, at the First Baptist Church in Wellman. The service will be live streamed on the Facebook page or website, Burial at Wellman Cemetery. Visitation this Tuesday from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Powell Funeral Home in Wellman. They are asking that you practice social distancing and masks are required. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be given to the First Baptist Church or to Wellman Senior Dining. You know, I said that we had finished the obituaries. There is one that's listed on the business page. It's more of a story. I will read this just quickly. Rockwell Executive knew everyone. It is an extended obituary about John Jack Cosgrove. It says, Mr. Cosgrove, whose first job after graduation was at Collins Radio and who went on to become CEO of Rockwell Collins, died at his home on January 23rd. Since then, comments on social media from former employees and co-workers at what today is known as Collins Aerospace, Cedar Rapids' largest employer and a division of Raytheon Technologies, spoke of Cosgrove's ability to connect with them. One Collins Aerospace Facebook post read, "He knew everyone's name and always had a smile for you." Another recalled that he would sit down in your office and ask for your input, suggestions, and feedback. A third said if you had a conversation with him, he'd remember your name forever. Kelly Ortberg, former Rockwell Collins and Collins Aerospace CEO and now a special advisor to United Technologies Office of the CEO, echoed that sentiment. Ortberg said, "Jack was amazing with people. He knew everyone in the company by their first name and always met them with words of encouragement." CEO President Stephen Tim said in an email, "Jack Cosgrove's influence on Collins Aerospace will be felt for generations to come. He created a company culture based on respect, collaboration, and a genuine interest in the success of everyone. He was born in Cedar Rapids in 1934 and spent his entire professional career in the city. He graduated from ISU in 1956 with a degree in electrical engineering and then started work at Collins Radio. He became president and CEO of Rockwell Collins, as well as senior vice president of Rockwell International in 1996 and then retired in 1999. His visitation was on Friday, and a mass and interment will be private. There's quite a bit of sports news here in the Gazette. We're going to pick what we can for our time, but a couple of very brief notices first. For high school basketball, there are a couple of quick stories. One says, "Rivalry Saturday shut down due to weather." Dateline Cedar Rapids, "Due to severe weather forecast today, Rivalry Saturday has been canceled. Already postponed from Thanksgiving weekend because of COVID-19, the event, moved from Coe College to Maquoketa Valley High School, was shut down Friday. The pared down slate was going to feature North Lynn, Denver, Algona Garrigan, Cedar Rapids Xavier, West Liberty, and Solon. The next Rivalry Saturday has been set for November 27th at a site that will be determined." And then second, also a basketball story, IHSAA eliminates third place games. The Iowa High School Athletic Association released postseason assignments for Class 3A and 4A on Friday and also announced changes to the state tournament. Consolation games will not be played this year, and game times have been spread out 2 hours apart instead of an hour and 45 minutes. The tournament is March 8th through 12th at Wells Fargo Arena in Des Moines. So here we go with some prep sports stories from Jeff Linder for girls basketball. No nail biter, Warriors down Lions 68-46. Dateline Cedar Rapids. No drama this time, and the Washington Warriors didn't mind that a bit. Hannah Stolke posted 25 points, 11 rebounds, and 3 assists, and Class 5A 7th-ranked Cedar Rapids Washington shot 60% in the first half of a 68-46 Mississippi Valley Conference girls basketball romp over Linmar last night at Washington High School. Warriors coach Chris James said, "I'm not really into sending messages, but the girls wanted to show Linmar and everybody else what they're made of," end quote. They were made of plenty Friday. Sydney Milvalski added 17 points, 7 rebounds, and 3 assists, and Deja Redmond capitalized on her first start of the season with a 10.8 rebound performance.
It all added up to a stress-free victory, which was a far cry from a 36-33 nail-biter January 5th, in which the Warriors had to rally late to pull it out of the fire. Stolke, a junior and University of Iowa commit, said, "We worked hard, played fast, and worked together. We love playing together. Our connection is really strong." Washington jumped out to an 8-0 lead in the first 4:15 and really wasn't threatened all night. It was 20-12 after a quarter, 41-26 at halftime. Stolke had 17 points at halftime, and the Warriors made 18 of 30 shots before intermission. Washington led by as many as 29 points. Redmond keyed a 10-0 run to start the fourth quarter. James said, We started Deja because we didn't think Linmar could match up with both Hannah and Deja inside, and I thought she played a heck of a game." Linmar got 25 points from its bench, including 11 points from Zoe Kennedy and 10 from Kaylin Obelton. And as for boys basketball, Jeff Johnson has contributed this article titled "Cougars Put It Together." Dateline Cedar Rapids, Caleb Schlack did Caleb Schlack things. The All-State senior center came pretty darn close to a triple-double last night in Cedar Rapids Kennedy's 71-47 win over Cedar Rapids Jefferson at the Cougars gym. Schlack had a game-high 19 points, piled up a game-high 17 rebounds, and blocked 7 shots. That's doing work. But the real reason Kennedy was able to overcome a 1-point halftime deficit and win going away was some of the other guys, specifically some of the bench guys. Jack Schissel had 3 three-pointers, including a banker at the third quarter buzzer from about 30 feet. Jackson Bowman hit all 4 of his field goal attempts for 8 points. Then there's Avante Bollinger. In just his 6th game this season, the senior guard had 9 points on 3 made threes. Kennedy coach John McGowan said, "Avante Bollinger is one of my favorite kids. He has an amazing attitude every single day. He has the most energy off the bench, the most energy in a game, the most energy in practice, the most energy in school, which is not always liked, but it's his personality. Everybody that knows Avante loves Avante, and to see him succeed on the court, he just kind of grinded it out. He played a little bit of JV earlier this year, and some opportunities opened up for him. He's really making the most of it and has developed his game to be able to contribute. Everybody in the locker room, they are more happy about Avante's success from where he came from than they are about their own. That's fun to see." Jefferson, at 2-13, took a 28-27 lead into the break, but it was all Kennedy in the second half. Back-to-back trays by Schissel and Cole Hrubas gave the Cougars a 38-30 lead. Kennedy, at 7-6, has won 3 in a row. McGowan said, "Absolutely, it's coming together. Not having a lot of preseason, we tried to revamp some things. The little things make a big difference. We weren't doing the little things early. We kind of cut corners to get ready for games fast. We weren't ready early." We have time, it looks like, for one more basketball story, boys basketball, by Mike Condon, a correspondent, titled "Saints Swarm and Buzz Past the Trojans 47-40. Dateline Iowa City. Iowa City West had the one. Cedar Rapids Xavier had the many. Chalk one up for the many. The Saints used a swarming defense to surround West standout Pete Moe and many of his teammates as well, controlling the game from start to finish for a 47-40 win last night at West. Moe, a talented 6'8" junior post, did score a game-high 21 points, but it didn't come easy as Xavier ran a number of players at the son of former Iowa standout Jeff Moe. Xavier coach Mike Freeman said, "He's a load. He is a really good player. We don't have one guy who can match up with him. We needed to keep running at him as a group and really play good together. And I thought we did that." The Saints, who got a sweep of the season series with Friday's win, not only slowed down Moe, but his teammates as well. Only 3 players scored for the Trojans, who were playing just their 5th game of the season. In fact, West's last game was a close loss to Xavier earlier this month. Even though West, at 1-4, struggled to find offense much of the night, the defense kept the Trojans in the hunt. After trailing by as many as 12 points, West twice cut the margin to 3 in the fourth quarter. Each time, Xavier responded with a strong offensive set. Freeman said, "I give all the credit to the kids for that. We just work every day. We know we are going to pretty much be in a close game every time we play. Good teams like West are going to make runs. That's what we tell our kids. We tell them they just have to keep executing and do the little things. That is what is going to win us games." There are a number of basketball roundup stories, but just for the sake of time, I will say that Sophia Barrett scored 18 points to help the Cougars defeat the Jayhawks 52-42 last night at Kennedy. Cedar Falls 47, Cedar Rapids Prairie 31 in girls basketball as well. This is also girls. Regina 55, Durant 37. For the boys, Cedar Rapids Washington 58 and Linmar 56. Then we have Marion 61, Maquoketa 55. Wanted to leave time to cover a little bit of other news. They have a business article titled "Foundation Aims to Help Businesses with Child Care." This from Brooklyn Drazy. It looks like this is from a publication called The Union, or that she's with The Union. "The Iowa Women's Foundation aims to give businesses tools to provide quality, affordable child care for employees. With business partners such as Casey's, U.S. Bank, and the Iowa Business Council, the Iowa Women's Foundation has formed the Iowa Business and Child Care Coalition to close the workforce gap between men and women, which has only grown worse during the COVID-19 pandemic. According to research conducted by the Iowa Women's Foundation in 2015, 70% of female-headed households in Iowa are struggling financially. In focus group studies in 18 communities, CEO Dawn Oliver Wyand said the foundation identified 6 barriers to economic self-sufficiency for women: employment, child care, housing, transportation, education, and training and mentors. When the foundation came back to those communities 1 year later to show their data, half the attendees agreed the biggest barrier to self-sufficiency for them was child care. To help businesses realizing that a lack of child care is hurting their bottom line, but aren't sure how to start fixing it, the coalition is releasing a business toolkit with solutions to provide child care benefits to employees. These solutions include backup child care options, flexible spending accounts, flexible work arrangements, off-site partnerships with child care facilities, in-house child care, and subsidized child care. We want to be able to give you these resources so you as a business leader can reach out and ask questions and then figure out what's best for you," Wyand said. In addition to information on solutions, the toolkit also will offer testimonials from businesses who have implemented practices to help their employees receive child care and other resources. The toolkit will be free. Businesses also can have it printed and delivered free of charge, or request that the Iowa Women's Foundation do a presentation on the toolkit. Once businesses are using it, Wyand said, the coalition will conduct one-on-one follow-up meetings to see how it's helped and learn more about how they can expand their efforts in lowering barriers for women entering the workforce. She said, here are some businesses that are already doing it. Here are the resources that you can use to help you. We don't have much time left, so I will just read the community letter that I didn't have time to do earlier before the break. This is titled, "Iowa's Proposed Gun Rights Amendment Goes Too Far," and it comes to us from Mary Kamen, K-E-M-E-N, of Cedar Rapids, who says, "The Iowa legislature recently approved an amendment to the state constitution that will permanently lessen the ability to change gun laws. Its provisions subjecting gun laws to strict scrutiny by the courts would make our amendment more restrictive than the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution. There are only 3 states with such a measure in their constitution. Missouri, our neighbor to the south, is one. For those who feel a gun in the home protects them from others, statistics show otherwise. In 2015, a white man in Missouri was 7 times more likely to commit suicide by gun than be fatally shot by an intruder. The gun death rate in Iowa increased 39% from 2009 to 2018, mostly due to a 36% increase in gun suicides. It is foolish to tie the hands of legislators at a time when gun death rates are rising. There's a difference between the rights in our Second Amendment and the restrictive clause the Iowa legislature is proposing. The latter could disallow any future laws to address public health issues in regard to guns, such as protecting children, those deemed harmful to society, and suicidal individuals. People who value gun ownership should favor laws that protect family and friends from accidental death and suicide, not restrictions that look the other way. And Ms. Keeman concludes by saying, please vote no on this amendment. And that does it for the reading of today's Cedar Rapids Gazette for Saturday, January 30th. I've been your reader, Mary Neff. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And we thank you for listening.